Text 93. That Brahmana who thus daily honors all beings, goes, endowed with a resplendent body, by a straight road to the highest dwelling place. So here it's referring to Brahman. So we understand that for those who are materialistically inclined, this is the goal that they can gain. In other words, by performing prescribed duties, and here we're talking about the duty in detachment. He's dealing nicely with the living entities. He's feeding and doing all these things for others. So that means that detached mood is done. Prescribed duties done in detached mood. So even for a materialist, then they can theoretically be elevated to the Brahman platform. So we, as we discussed before, it's understood that that won't be very well accomplished by a non-devotee because of the desires that sometimes this breaks down. But for the devotee, then this aspect is there. And this is referred to many times in the Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita about being kind to others, dealing properly with others. It's always comes up again and again and again, this point. Because by doing that, then you please the Lord, because the Lord is in every living entity. So when you deal nicely with Krishna, most important are his devotees. So the living entities are very dear to him. So if you deal nicely with them, because they're dear to Krishna, then you become dear to him. Right? Means we may say, well, they're just non-devotees. That's fine to say, but we must understand Krishna's going along with them in their heart. And whatever they're doing, wherever they're going, right? Where do you find a friend who will go with you? Just like if you tell your friend, you know, like we've been great friends for years and that, and yes, and we do everything together, yes, and that. So I'm going to, take birth as a worm and stool, so you, of course, you want to come along, and I forget it, he's not going with you. But Krishna will go with you, So even though your desires are such, you end up in such a, bad position. Krishna will go with you. That's the thing. He goes with you. So this aspect must be appreciated. That Krishna is going with us, no matter what the situation. So that means that living entity must be very dear. If as soon as you enter the material world, he comes as the Lord in the heart. And when we leave the material world, then he manifests as the Supreme Lord. And we have our eternal relationship with him. So that means there's been no time when Krishna was not with us. Nor in the future will there be a time when he won't be with us. So such a friend is rare. Right? Such a friend is very rare. So now if we deal with all the living entities nicely, then that pleases the Lord. Because he's been dealing with them nicely, so if we also deal, then we get that. The same thing. So just this activity of honoring all living beings like that, then is so powerful in releasing us from the bodily concept of life. Bringing us, helping us get to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta. And then from that platform of Brahma-Bhuta, it becomes very easy then to develop our love for Krishna. It means we're starting to develop our attraction and attachment for Krishna. But once the whole material covering is gone, it means the attachment is gone, conditioned nature, that advancement is very quick. Very, very quick. So this is a very important point, to be respectful to everyone. So it says, having performed this Bali offering, means offering of this rice to everybody, he shall first feed his guest, and according to the rule, give alms to an ascetic and to a student. So like that, so the grihastha is also giving to those who come begging, the students come begging, the ascetics, the vanaprastas, sannyasis, they come begging, or even sometimes the very, very detached Brahmin householders, they may go out begging. You know, they can go to so many houses and then stop. It means if they're just living, all they do is study, teach like this, they also may go begging like this. So such a person. So these, besides respecting all living entities, then he must feed his guest. In other words, before himself. He's made the offering to the deities, and that, then he's taking care of the guest and giving alms to the others and all this. A twice-born householder gains, by giving alms, the same reward for his meritorious acts which a student obtains for presenting in accordance with the rule a cow to his teacher. So the student, by giving things to the children, I mean to the teacher, then the householder gets by doing this. So giving cows in charity are very high. Means the only thing higher is the kanyadan, as we mentioned and discussed before in the Brahma marriage. Father giving away the daughter. And that's considered the highest. And then after that is the cow. Like that. Let him give in accordance with a rule to a brahmana who knows the true meaning of the Veda. Even a small portion of food as alms, or a pot full of water, having garnished the food with seasoning or the pot with flowers and fruits. So it's like if one has something, then one is giving something to eat, or he's giving, you know, grains. Because some people will accept already cooked items, some will only accept uncooked items, like that. And if he doesn't have anything, he just has some water, this, he should at least give some water. But first, you know, put some flowers or this or that. In other words, it should be that respectfulness must be there. And this is for someone who is learned in the scriptures, like that, who is following very nicely. Knows the true meaning of the Veda. That means they've studied, they have understood, and they are practicing. And then from that practice, they get realization. So such a person must always be nicely respected. And nicely dealt with in giving alms. 97. The oblations to gods and manes made by men ignorant of the law of gifts are lost. If the givers in their folly present shares of them to brahmanas who Such convoluted English here. An offering made in the mouth fire of brahmanas rich in sacred learning and austerities saves from misfortune and from great guilt. Oh, brahmins who are mere ashes. Okay, this means that somebody's sacrifice and everything, whatever he does, you know, if the material benefits are lost, if he is giving in charity, foolishly is giving in charity to so-called brahmanas. Brahmanas who aren't actually, they don't know the Veda, they don't know anything. Just beggars, like that. So therefore, such honor and all that is not given to beggars. One can give alms to a beggar, but you know him as a beggar. Means he has no real qualities, he's just in need, you give him something. But if you're respecting him and treating him as if he's a highly qualified brahmana, then the demigods and everything get upset. Because this person doesn't know what is actual, what is proper and what is not. So in other words, if we're respecting someone who is not a devotee, not qualified in the proper philosophy, and they don't, you know, even they don't have any materially brahminical qualities or knowledge, then such respect is, but you're giving it to them in that form, and you are actually thinking that these are very qualified people, right? Then that is, the demigods become So then things do not go so nicely for us. So if the demigods are getting upset, why are they getting upset? Because the Lord is upset. Because they are simply the limbs of the Lord, the universal form. The arms are made up of all the demigods because they do all the work. They take care of, you know, the light department and the rain department and all the, you know, the wind department and all these different aspects of universal management. And so, because the actual understanding of what's there, Krishna has created the true qualities of a Brahmana. And if we mistakenly take someone who does not have those qualities and respect them as a Brahmana, then that is not proper. In other words, one should be educated oneself what are the actual proper qualities. And recognizing that should worship such people. So we have to know what are the qualities and then how to recognize them. And that becomes important. Does that make some sense? Okay, then here the aspect of the mouth part. In other words, feeding brahmanas rich in sacred learning, then there's so much benefit. So the most sacred, the main aspect of the sacred learning, because it says here, one who knows the true meaning. So the true meaning is devotion. So those who properly serve Vaishnavas, respect Vaishnavas, feed the Vaishnavas, then they get so much benefit. Right? So we advance nicely. It's one of the main aspects of Pancharatra, is service to Vaishnavas. Very, very powerful, very important. One of the Alwars, the 12, and there are 12 different associates or paraphernalia of the Lord. Kulashekar Maharaj. Maharaj Kulashekar. He's one of the 12 Alwars. So they were different, you know, personalities. I'm not sure who Kulashekar was. But there was one, he was called Nila, and Tirumangai Alwar. He was the Lord's sword. You know, he's the personification of the Lord Vishnu's sword. So he came and he was, you know, I think he was from a very rough background. I don't know what was the family, but his behavior and all that was not so cultured. And one day he saw there some Gandharvas had been at some lake, and because in the noontime, that's the time when the Gandharvas, Yakshas and all that, big bodies of water are theirs. You know, after the normal time when you take bath and then you take your lunch. So from the time from lunch until the evening time when you take bath, that time so the Gandharvas and all that, that the water's theirs. Like that. So that time just after lunch for some time, because you shouldn't take a bath after lunch. Because otherwise it ruins digestion and so many things. So no one takes baths, so that's given for them. They can go there and peacefully use the facilities, because the humans won't use it. So then these Gandharvas and that had been there, and then suddenly something happened, they left very quickly, and left behind one of their girls. And so she got stuck there. I think they would come once a year. Every year they would come there and have a party at this place. And somehow they left very quickly. So she got stuck. So then this Tirumangai, he came and he saw this girl. And he was so impressed with her beauty that he wanted to marry her. So he went to her and says, you know, they marry me. And she says, okay. But, you know, first I want to see if you're qualified enough. Like that. He says, you know, fine, whatever you know, test you want to do, you tell me, I will accomplish it. So she said, okay, for 1 year, you feed every day 1,000 Vaishnavas. For 1 year. Right? So then he said, okay. So, you know, he went, took whatever wealth he had, started feeding every day 1,000 Vaishnavas, personally going, serving them, seeing that they were satisfied, everything like that. He did, and then eventually his money ran out. But he's so intent on marrying this girl, and then he starts, you know, stealing and dacoitry and everything. And every day, feeding 1,000 Vaishnavas like this. So then after, you know, basically after practically a year had gone by, then, you know, he was desperate for money, didn't know what to do, and nobody was coming down the road, no one to steal from, you know. So he didn't know what to do, and then suddenly he sees in this carriage coming two very, very opulent people, so much gold and everything, you know, very good, you know. So when the carriage comes, he stops the carriage, jumps out, okay, you know, all, you know, give me all your gold and everything like that. So they gave everything. And then, you know, very greedy, you know, like that. And he noticed, well, you've given everything. And he talks to the lady on the chair, on the carriage, and says, but on your toe there, then there's a gold ring, you know, like that. She says, well, at the time of marriage, my husband put that on there. So if you want that, you can take it yourself. I'm not taking it off. So then, you know, okay. So he stepped forward, you know. Tried it, wouldn't come, you know, like that. So then, you know, he's trying different things, wouldn't come. So then he just bent over and bit it with his teeth, and he's trying to pull. And then when he touched her toe, then suddenly came, realized that this is Lakshmi Narayan. Like that. So then he stood back, and then they manifest their form as Lakshmi Narayan, because they were so pleased with his determination in serving Vaishnavas every day. 1,000, I mean, it's no joke. For feed 1,000 devotees every day for a year. And so then they revealed, and then from that time on, then he became, you know, then he manifested his mood as a devotee. And that, you know, I mean, you know, so we had what happened with the Gandharva girl. Well, the year was up, she disappeared, and he couldn't care less anyway now, you know. So now, then he went on, and he, when you go into Sri Rangam, into the main temple, means you have the outside gates, and you go through the whole thing. When you get to the third gate, because from the third gate you actually go into the temple compound. Around that compound is this monstrous wall, like 20 feet high, and I don't know how thick. So he built that wall, like that. He built that wall, you know. Same method, dacoitry and all that. Whatever, he built the wall. That was because he was the sword. You know, it's like you need some action. You know. So the point was, is just the Lord is so pleased by the feeding of devotees, like that. So therefore, it's saying here, one should worship those who are, I mean, respect those or offer alms to those who are who have, who know the true meaning of the Veda. He says even a small portion like that. So that is the thing. And then if you can, yeah.
Yeah,
so this is to those who are begging. Then it says, let him offer in accordance with the rule to a guest who has come of his own accord a seat and water, as well as food, garnished with seasonings, according to his ability. In other words, it should be something very nice and palatable. You know, it shouldn't be just any old thing. You know, it should be properly done. It can be simple, but it has to be properly done. So this is the aspect of atiti. Titi means a specific time. Atiti means not specific. It means said, showed of their own accord. Means he didn't invite them. It wasn't prearranged. It wasn't planned. It just happened. Like that. Then, 100. A brahmana who stays unhonored in the house takes away with him all the spiritual merit, even of a man who subsists by gleaning ears of corn or offers oblations in 5 fires. In other words, someone who's very detached, you know, the vanaprastha who just goes out and just whatever's left picks that up. You know, doesn't, you know, very austere in this way, you know, or oblations in the 5 fires that we mentioned before, the 5 different aspects, you know, the ahuta, huta, prahuta, and what's it? I don't even remember. I already forgot. Then, yeah, puta, brahmanyahuti, yeah, and prasita. So then, someone remembers. So then he says that when, if he's not received or not honored or not given any charity, and that when he walks out of the house, all the spiritual merit of that house goes with him. So if you receive then that person, you gain spiritual merit by serving such a person. If you don't, when they leave, whatever spiritual merit they had goes with them. Like that. So that's... And that is... In other words, one cannot ignore devotees. It says, grass... And that means, I think, kusa, or something to sit on, room for resting, water, and fourthly, a kind word. These things never fail in the houses of good men. So a place to sit, like that, or a place to rest, some water, some nice word, at least that much. You know, if one doesn't have anything or this or that, then that's the minimum. Like Prabhupada gives the example, when a guest comes to the house, then one should receive them, you know, feed them nicely, and all these different things. If you can't do that, then at least you give a place to sit, some water, and all that kind of thing, a kind word, which is this. This is the minimum. If you can't do that, then at least you give, you know, you don't have a mat, at least you give the water. If you don't have that, then at least a kind word. If you can't do that, then it says you should just stand there and cry and just feel bad for your being utterly useless and wretched and disgusting and all that kind of thing. Then the guest will be satisfied. So that's, Prabhupada explains that many times, that example. So here's getting just the details. But a Brahman who stays one night only is declared to be a guest, atiti. For because he stays, stita, not long, anityam, he is called atiti, a guest. So that means someone who just comes on asan, that, and goes. That's atiti. So then all these things apply very nicely. One must not consider as a guest a brahmana who dwells in the same village, the one who seeks his livelihood by social intercourse, even though he has come to a house where there is a wife and their sacred fires are kept. Those foolish householders who constantly seek to live on the food of others become, in consequence of that baseness, after death, the cattle of those who give them food. In other words, someone in the community does this. I should point out this verse. Means householders who just go and see here. One has to be very careful how this is used. Because now the Vedas are dealing here and telling both sides. So now it is told the person whose house that someone has gone to, how to deal with a guest and who is a guest. Then it's telling those people who are prospective guests what is a guest. Right? It says here a guest is this Brahman who comes out of his own accord. And he just stays for that moment, or he stays the night and leaves. He is doing whatever, he's traveling somewhere, or, you know, whatever it is he's doing. And he's, you know, he's maintaining himself in this way. But he has other purposes, you know. But that here it says the foolish householder who constantly he lives by this method. In other words, he lives off of others, a freeloader. Then it says that in the next life, because of this bad behavior, uncultured behavior, he will take birth as cattle in the house of those people who are kind enough to feed him. Right? Because cows stay in your house and, you know, you feed them, you take care of them and all that. They're not guests, you know. Your cows aren't guests, you know. But at least they give something, right? As a human being, you just lived off of other people and didn't do anything. You know, this is as a householder. But at least as a cow, you give some milk, you know, so there's some benefit. Like that. So this point is being made there. In other words, it's not a livelihood as such, that that's just what you do. Right? Means that is how... Means the Brahman is studying, he's teaching, he's preaching. That is his occupation. And then he may also beg. He may just take what the Lord sends, or he may go out and beg. You know, and he has a certain amount of houses he can go, only a certain amount he takes, like that. So only as in this way it's going on. But if someone makes that their occupational duty, is just going and living in other people's houses, you know, a professional freeloader, then he'll end up as cattle in those people's houses who have taken care of him. So one should be very careful of this. So one should understand that one uses these for oneself. This is very important in the process of being trained, developing training, and the process of anartha nivritti. One must understand how to use what things you use on yourself and what things you use for others. Just like in anartha nivritti, then the process is you see good qualities in others and you see bad qualities in yourself. So that's how, so both will be discussed. What are good qualities? What are bad qualities? And it says that this is how we should deal. Now, if we take those and we see the good qualities in ourselves, very broad-minded, very liberal with ourselves, you know, very, you know, compassionate and merciful and understanding, and with others, then we're very strict and very critical and other things like that, then that's misuse of the instruction. So here, we're talking about what's guessed, what's not guessed. Then we have to be careful. Like that. We don't misuse this on others. Like that. In other words, someone else like this, then they, you know, you take care. Someone from your same village, they come, you know, they're just friends. They come in, you deal with them as friends. Here we're talking about honoring the atiti. So that's not done for them, because that's not what they are. Because that's very formal. Right? The dealing with the atiti, you don't know them necessarily, they just showed up. That's a formal dealings, formal, respectful dealing. But with someone from the village that you know, or later it'll go on to explain, relatives and other things, there you're going to deal with them in that relationship. In other words, the relationship is established. What is the relationship here? So then that must be done. So you have to know what are the relationships being established. You can't mix relationships. That's very important. The Vedic whole culture is personal. You have to know how to deal with the different persons. So you also must know what is atiti and what is not atiti, so that you deal properly with the different people in this way. The guest who is sent by the setting sun in the evening must not be driven away by a householder. Whether he has come at supper time or at an inopportune moment, he must not stay in the house without entertainment. In other words, it's not that, okay, in the evening comes, it's, you know, okay, now see you later. It's that he's come and this, but here we've already described what is the atiti, right? It is a Brahman who stays one night only is declared to be a guest, atiti, because he stays, stita, not long, anityam. Right? Like that. He's not staying fixed for a long time. It's only one night. And we see he is qualified. He knows the true meaning of the Veda. Like that. Rich in sacred learning, austerities. This is called, by definition, atiti, guest. So whenever it mentions guest after this, this is what it's meaning. So such a person should not be set away. Said, man, he must be entertained. Means in the evening time, that's when the family sits around, eats, they talk, or whatever they're doing, they do. You know, if there's some music, or this and this, that. So they should be part of it. In other words, what's going on in the family, they should be part of the whole scene. And then in the next morning, then he may go. Let him offer to his guests seats, rooms, beds, attendance on departure, and honor while they stay. To the most distinguished in the best form, to the lower ones in a lower form, to equals on an equal manner. So it means if someone is more distinguished than you, then very elaborately. If they're equals, you'll deal like equally. And if they're less, then you'll, you know, take care, but more simple. In other words, one should deal with someone according to their level and all that. One should have discrimination. One doesn't have discrimination, then one must teach everybody nicely. But it mentioned here that someone who's not qualified, then that foolish householder is respecting them, then it's not considered so good. Right? But we generally see that it's recommended if you don't know, can't discriminate, then better to respect people. At least you don't commit any offense. Right? Modern thing is you don't know, you deal with them like trash. And then when somebody else tells you, goes, hey, this is a big guy, then, it's nice to meet you. Like that. But the Vedic system is you don't know, deal nicely. And later on, if you figure it out, that's another thing. But the whole idea is one should be trained. So it's foolish householder. He doesn't know. So a knowledgeable householder is able to distinguish between, you know, by the qualities, by the behavior, by the knowledge, by so many ways he can understand. And then therefore he'll know that this person's senior to me, equal to me, or junior to me. A brahmana, now this is for the guest now. A brahmana shall not name his family and Vedic gotra in order to obtain a meal. For he who boasts of them for the sake of a meal is called by the wise a foul feeder. This is vantasi. Right? We've heard this vantasi before. So it means sannyasis who go back, you know, in their marriage, or a brahmana who is, you know, very proud of his position, you know, his gotra, or his, what is his name here? Yeah, his family and gotra. You know, we're from this, you know, level of family and this particular gotra, because, you know, people respect these different things. And so if one names these things just to get facility, then it's considered, you know, this person's, you know, not very, it's considered bad. Means they may be respected because they are from such a place, but their culture, for themselves, the culture is very bad. It's a very bad thing. Just like to live off, freeload off of others is bad. So here, to take advantage of one's position. So one should be very, very careful about, you know, trying to establish yourself and get facility based on who's your guru, you know, and what's your position or how long you've been devotee, you know. You know, it's like that. One should be very careful about these aspects. You know, because then devotee, okay, you know, they do. One is like, you know, in an elevated position. But it's not done, it doesn't come from the heart. But if in talking and all that, you know, the person is very humble and nice, and in talking, then you find out that this person is, you know, is very senior and all that, then you naturally take care very nicely. But if they come up and say, I am such and such and this and that, it's not considered very good, you know? And to the point where it says that they are in the same mentality of a sannyasi who falls down and goes back to his wife. You know? Like that. So it's not considered very good. You know? Like that. But a kshatriya who comes to the house of a brahmana is not called a guest, atithi, nor a vaishya, nor a shudra, nor a personal friend, nor a relative, nor the teacher. But if a kshatriya comes to the house of a brahmana in the manner of a guest, the householder may feed him according to his desire, after the above-mentioned brahmanas have eaten. Says here also then, Vaishya, Shudra, like that, if they come as a guest, then he may take care of them, but then he'll feed them in a position, you know, according to their, in a situation according to their position after the others. In other words, generally when you're feeding in the family, then sort of like the women, the children will be taken care of in one place, and then the guests in another. And then the main ladies of the house, they with the husbands will be, you know, doing the organizing and all this. The young children, then the older ladies or the pregnant women or someone sick, then in a separate place they may be fed. You don't have to wait for the whole hierarchy thing to be worked. And then, but in the guests, then that will be there. So the special guests fed, and then after that, then others may be taken care of. So if they come in that mood, but otherwise when they come, they're not dealt normally as a guest. Like a relative comes, not dealt as a guest. I mean, means guest means atiti, the formal dealings and all that. The king, then you take care of whatever, like this and that, but it's not such a formal thing. I mean, so this is to the Brahmin's house. You know? So that's why we see Sringi, who got so bent out of shape, because the king came and was expecting this and that. You know, he's not a guest, he's the king. He comes, he needs something, then okay, we take care, but he doesn't, you know, have to get all, you know. The Brahmin comes and doesn't, he leaves, takes everything with him. But as a kshatriya, like that. What he wasn't understanding is, this is the king, but he's a devotee, so he's the best of the Brahmins. The son wasn't understanding. Father understood. But not only that, besides being a king, because here it's just saying kshatriya, but that's one category. Because you'll see when it comes to Brahmin and kshatriya, the kshatriya is always below the Brahmin. But when it comes to the category of emperor, that's above an ordinary Brahmin. Because the emperor protects all the kings so that all the Brahmins are protected. So killing of the emperor is worse than killing a Brahmin. Because when he's killed, the whole world goes into disarray. So then Sringi's father was pointing that out to him. Is that, you know, you have cursed the emperor. Now everybody's going to suffer. I mean, everybody. Here you're worried about a little etiquette that you saw him as a king and he's insulted a Brahmin. But he's not just an ordinary king, he's the emperor. You know? And it was a, you know, minor thing, you know. What's the big deal? A dead snake. So no big, you know. Brahmins don't care so much for this. You know, kshatriyas in their passion. There's so many things. Who cares? Says here, even to others, personal friends, and so forth, who have come to his house out of affection, he may give food garnished with seasoning according to his ability at the same time with his wife. In other words, the family, if it's friends and all this and that, they may all eat together and this and that. In other words, the formalities aren't there. The other thing is the Brahmins are fed first and all that, and then after that, then others like that. Relative, personal friend, then they just eat with the family, you know? Like that. That's not a big deal. In other words, if they come, whatever formalities of the house or guests are being taken care of, then that will be done first. And then afterwards, then that's all taken care of. Then, you know, just with the friends and relatives, then you sit and, you know, intimate conversation, sit, eat together, and all these kind of things. In other words, they're not treated as a guest there and fed at that time. They're part of the family. So the family is now taking care of their guests. So when a relative or friend comes, they are in the same category as the family. You know, so then after seeing that the guests are served, then they do. I've seen that myself. We've been traveling, preaching, and we're at some life member's house or this or that. It's time for lunch, and his family members come. And you'll always see that we're sitting to take prasad. Those other relatives or friends, even the house, or business friends or anything, they're right there helping serve prasad along with that. They're not sitting with us. Never. I've never seen it. Means we as the sadhus were sitting, and only us, like that. And if we've been in Brahmin families, we've been at their house, then the elder, you know, the father, or the other elder Brahmins, they may be sitting with us also. And the younger ones who are the active, you know, grihastas, not the retired, means they're all like vanaprast and like that. They're older, because older people will take, you know, then they may sit with us. But the younger ones who are the actual running the house, they won't. They'll always serve. And if they have any friends or guests, they're also part of the whole service. Like that. I've seen myself. I've never seen anybody else sit down. Never. And then afterwards, you know, those friends, many times they'll do a lot of the talking. Because they're friends. They've come over to socialize. Like that. So then they'll socialize with you. You're the guest. You're the atiti. So they talk this, that, and then they, you know, the other members of the family take care of other things and like that. And, you know, you go off and you take some rest. And then you'll hear them all in the next room and they'll be, you know, talking and laughing and this and that. When I was down in the, what do you call it? Yeah. Also when I was just now in Bangalore, we were at congregational members' houses. Then myself, you know, we'd sit in one place, and that, and yeah, I think it was just myself. Yeah, it was just ourselves. Others were sitting. I don't think anyone else ate. There were like maybe 20 families there, and they took care of myself, other sannyasis and brahmacharis like that. They're all feeding, and all the leading people are there, not the small, the younger one. The leaders, the whole leaders of the whole congregation and the preaching and the senior men in the community, they're the ones serving, talking. Some are serving, some are just talking and, you know, keeping up, like I mentioned, the entertain, you know, like this, keeping up the conversation and all that. And we all finished and all that, and, you know, everyone's seen off and all that. And we were supposed to leave. So you went to leave, but then one of the persons of the house wanted to discuss some things with me. So then, you know, I went back and we sat in the next room in his office. Then only at that time, after we had gone, then we saw all those congregational members and that. Then they all sat down and were taking prasad together and laughing and joking and talking and all this and that. And the person who had called me, he didn't eat because he's dealing with, you know, like this. In the next room, it's all going on. And only after a long time like that, then they brought some little something, and he took a little something, because it was, you know, like now, you know, 2-3 hours later, like this. So this is being practiced today. It's not, this is, you know, sometimes devotees are under the impression that, well, all these rules, okay, 5,000 years ago they had some meaning. Or some will be more broad-minded and, okay, 500 years ago, time of Lord Chaitanya, then they could be followed. And then some will be a little bit more broad-minded in that, okay, when Prabhupada was, you know, young and that, and he talked about these different things, then they could have been followed. But of course, nowadays, no question they can be followed, right? Unfortunately, there's millions of people in India who are following it today. You know, the experience I just mentioned now is 1 month old. And other things that have been over so many years, over the last 20 years I've seen, going on live and well. I've never seen any exception to it. You go to these houses, I've never seen any exception. Okay. So it's very, very, I mean, it's very practical, because we see that there's certain relationships. Now when you have a formal situation and you sit relatives down, how do you deal with them? Right? If you're with a friend, what is the fun of eating? You sit, you talk, you joke, you laugh, you do different things, you know, get him to eat this or that, or you steal something from his plate, he does it. You know, it's all the part of the flavor. So now if you sit him down in a formal situation, then how do you deal? How then where's the rasa? Where is the friendship rasa going to manifest? It won't manifest. So therefore the friend, because he's friend, means equal, like that, then he takes part in the rasa that you're tasting, serving the guest. So he also serves the guest. So then that takes care of that aspect very nicely. Plus they, as friends, taste that friendship rasa that they're both doing the aspect of serving the guest. Then once the guest is taken care of, then they taste, you know, sitting down and doing this and that together and so many things. You know? So if they're close enough or intimate, it says, then at the same time with his wife. So that means then more intimate. Says because he's came with affection. Even to the other personal friends and so forth who have come to his house out of affection. Right? So now if it's personal friends who are not so close, then they wouldn't be sitting and eating at the same time when the wife is there and this and that. Then it's more of acquaintance. Then they may take together, but they won't. The wife will serve or other members of the family will serve. You know, then they may take together. Like there may be some business associate or something. Then they'll eat like that and the ladies of the house will serve. And if the sadhus and all that, the men of the house will serve. The women will be organizing the thing, the men will be serving. Like this. But if it's intimate, close friend, you know, personal friend, then they may sit down together and the ladies are there and it's all like that. But then it's not so formal. In other words, does this make some sense? You know, so this is all just the different elements of rasa. In other words, we have to know how to work with friends, how to work with seniors, how to work with juniors. Otherwise, how do we taste the relationship? Just like you have a recipe. You know, I have to follow the recipe. Like that. If I put the right amount of everything and do everything in the right way, I end up with a very nice preparation. So the more strictly I follow it, the better the result. Like that. So we may say, well, it's so difficult, all these different things. But then, yes, then it's a simple recipe, you know. Go to the fridge and take something out and sit down and eat it. You know, take a TV dinner, stick it in the microwave, and then eat it. But the result is not very great. So when one goes through this whole process, then one sees that the reciprocation that one is looking for in friends and relatives and guests and all these different things actually is tasted. Yes. Without hesitation, this means he doesn't have to think about it, it's just done. Means there's nothing wrong. He may give food even before his guests. It means you have guests. We're still, the word guest still means, you know, elevated Brahmins, sadhus, devotees, like this. To the following persons, namely, newly married women, to infants, to the sick, and to pregnant women. Like that. So that is, But the foolish man who eats first without having given food to these persons does, while he crams, not only that, after death, he will be devoured by dogs and vultures. Okay. So how do you say? So this doesn't mean that it's in the same place where that guest is. That's in another room. You know, generally one, you know, sets it up somewhere else and just feeds them there. Because, why, these persons, infants, they don't wait. Sick have to eat whenever they need this, that, they can't wait. Pregnant women, they have to be taken care of. Newly married women, this means newly married. This doesn't mean, you know, you're married, you know, 1 year ago. And, well, we're just newly married. This means just married, you know. Like that, because they're still, they don't know what happens, they're not part of the scene yet, you know, they haven't been integrated into the whole scene. So once they become integrated in the scene, then they don't fall in that category. So if he if the man in the house is eating before these particular persons, then it's not considered very good. He must always see, because he's supposed to protect. Right? The man of the house is supposed to see that whoever is being cared for in the house is actually taken care of. So that's there. So then here it says, after the brahmanas, the kinsmen, and the servants have dined, the household and his wife may afterwards eat what remains. So the brahmanas that you're taking care of, then if kinsmen especially means that relatives and all that, not so much friends, who are not intimate. It's just like brothers or something like that, and one may, but I mean especially elders, you know, uncles and cousins, I mean all these persons that it's, you know, more respectable or more distant, then they're fed nicely because they have come. And then the servants, yes, seeing that, in other words here, another thing, because generally you think, it says, after they have dined, the household and his wife may afterwards eat what remains. Normally you think, well, okay, we'll eat, and then what remains the servants get. No, because the servants are also being taken care of. You know, especially here in the Vedic concept, is the servants were part of the household. Means you didn't have like what you'd have now, where they're just paid, hired workers. But they actually lived there. They had no other subsistence than living in that house. So the man of the house would take care of their clothing, you know, where they would stay, their food, everything like that. So the Shudras were part of the family. This is what's very much misunderstood. The Shudras were completely taken care of. They were part of the family. But they were the servants. They knew what the relationship was. So they didn't become proud or didn't try to take advantage of the facilities. So they were dealt with just like members of the family. In other words, of shelter. Prabhupada many times talks about sometimes someone have very good loyal servant like that, then it's natural that when the person's daughter is ready to get married, the man in the house tries to help out, help arrange or use facilities they have, or he'll also give something for the wedding, give donation for that. You know, if the wedding's somewhere back in their village, or because the relationship's very, very close. I think he was mentioning about, I don't know if it was Netaji Subhash Bose, or about the Bose who ran the Bengal chemicals where Prabhupada worked, is that many times just when he wanted to kind of like relieve his mind, he would go out for a drive in his car and he would discuss all kinds of things with his driver. You know? Because the driver, older, you know, is an older person, been around, and experienced, they see many things. Shudras by age become respectable because they see a lot. And they're right there in the material thing, it means a lot to them. So they're much more affected by the material scene. So they can really tell you, you do this and it works nice, and you do that and it's really a problem. You know, like that. So Brahmins aren't as affected, so they speak from the Shastra, like that, and Shastra with experience. The Shudras speak from experience. You know? So then he would discuss many, many things with them, practical things and dealings and this and that with people and so many, and they tell so many nice things. So if it's understood, then it's very, very nice, very, very pleasant. The Shudra wants to be taken care of. It's just very natural. You know, it's very difficult for him to organize all the big things and get together all the facilities. He just wants facilities. He has material desire once. So if someone takes care of that for them, then they're very happy, very satisfied. Of course, they have to be nicely trained. They have to be human. They have to be cultured. If they're not cultured, then of course it's a big problem. So the servant must be cultured and the master must be cultured. Then it works very, very nicely. Then we see it's just part of the family. So here, the servants also have to be taken care of because of how they'll do their work. They are part of the scene. They're taking care of the house. They're taking care of the duties or the land or whatever they may be, whatever their duty. So they, because they're under the protection of the householder, they must be fed. They must be taken care of. So if there's less, the problem won't be theirs. If there's less, it will be the problem of the householder, right? One might say, well, but why would it be the servants cook less? No, in these houses, servants don't cook anything. No good family will the servant ever cook for the family. They don't do that. They can cut sabji, they can wash pots, they can grind spices. They do not cook. Even the most aristocratic, wealthy family, they do not cook. I've seen that myself. Servants in there doing all kinds of things, lady of the house is cooking. Never will you see them do it. I even saw when I was in Delhi, then some Punjabis, I was staying in their house, and I noticed that the servants would go through the house and clean the floors. They would go through the house and clean the floors. And then sometime later, half hour later, or you know, whenever it was convenient, I saw the lady of the house come through and deal with the chairs, you know, the tables, the cabinets, and all that, dusting them and organizing them. And then I saw this for 2 days. So then I asked the man of the house, I said, I noticed the servant only deals with the floor, but the lady of the house, she deals with everything above the floor. And he says, oh yes, he says, this is a very important principle. He says, because one, servants, you always have to watch, they steal. Prabhupada said, servant means thief. So if they just deal with the floor, then generally there's not a whole lot of things of value on the floor, you know, and that. But everything of value is always on, is above the floor, on the tables and cabinets and all these things. So one, they don't deal with that, from that aspect. And two, it says if the servants clean the whole house, where is the feeling that this is your house? So therefore the lady of the house goes through and deals with all the furnitures and all the different, you know, articles in the house and sets them how she wants and all this, then it gives the flavor of it's her house. She's put it. It's her personality she's put. The servant puts it, it's the servant's personality. She puts. So therefore, that feeling, this is your house and you're taking care of it, then that is an important element. So this is a interesting thing. So the whole science of servants is not just so easy. You just get somebody, pay them something, and then they do everything. You know, we see they don't cook, they don't take care of your personal belongings and the, you know, the household paraphernalia. They just do the cleaning the floors, cleaning outside, and they clean the bathrooms, you know, these kind of things. But they're not dealing with things of value like that, because that's you have the room, the empty room, they can clean the empty room. What makes it your house is the furniture, right? How you put the furniture, how you put everything. So that you deal with, like that. It also keeps one also from being proud, because the householder is not proud, the servants don't get proud. But the householder doesn't deal with it, you know, that's the servant's business. The servant deals with it because it's not actually his business. He becomes proud. So then they're both proud. The whole idea in the Vedic culture is servants are humble, the householder is humble. And in this way, both of them can make advancement. That's it. Like that. So then what remains, that the household and his wife eat. So then, if intimate friends or, you know, personal friends who come with affection, comes, that's the time they eat. All this, everything else is done. Then they sit down with the husband and wife, and then they eat. Like that. But if they're, you know, relatives of, you know, different, they're not of that caliber, then they're fed after here. What is it? The brahmanas, then the kinsmen. You know, like that. Then is dealt. Then the servants, then themselves. And then the next point is meaning after having properly, you know, done his worship of the Lord, offered bhoga, you know, respected the Vaishnavas, then only after he'll eat. Ah, this is interesting. Straight out of the Gita. He who prepares food for himself alone eats nothing but sin. For it is ordained that the food which remains after the performance of the sacrifices shall be the meal of virtuous men. Right? So Krishna says that in the Gita. So we know sacrifice means offering to the Lord. you know, means how we offer and all these things, and the, you know, performance of this, of, you know, chanting and all these things. Let him honor with the honey mixture a king, an officiating priest, a snataka, the teacher, a son-in-law, a father-in-law, and a maternal uncle, if they come again after a full year has elapsed since their last visit. Honey mixture means madhuparka, like that. So these persons are honored with so madhuparka is not just for anyone. Madhuparka is for these kind of persons. King, officiating priest, snataka, the teacher, a son-in-law, because of the marriage. Then madhuparka is, it's called madhuparka, when the father-in-law receives the son-in-law before the girl comes. It means he receives him, respects him, worships him, and then says, you know, I've chosen you as the qualified groom for my daughter. Then the girl comes out and goes around the boy seven times, you know, with this special cloth, and then that cloth is removed, they see each other, they exchange garlands. So the Gandharva rite is performed because they have to touch for kanyadan. So when you touch, you're married. So they do it rather than just touching. They exchange the garland, Gandharva rite, then they touch hands, and then the father gives in charity, girl. Then the husband then takes the hand, panigrahana, and then the offering of the puffed rice and the fire going around the seven steps, then they're married. It's interesting in the marriage. You see, the girl sits on the right side of the bride sits on the right side of the groom, up until the seven steps has been performed. Before that, she sits on the right. After that, she sits on the left. Because then it's considered fully that she's married. Because the Gandharva rites aren't taking that seriously. Because it says a Brahmin and this is not married according to Gandharva rites. So there, because you're going to touch. They're going to touch each other. There must be some aspect of marriage. You can only touch someone you're married to. So therefore, the Gandharva rites are done, but it's not considered fully married. They're married, but it's not considered complete. Therefore, she always sits on the right, because the wife sits on the left. You know, someone who's not the wife sits on the right. Like that. But after the seven, after the Lajhoma and the Saptapati, then she sits on the left. Then it's considered the Brahma marriage has been completed. Like that. Interesting. Subtleties. So in that, the father-in-law then respects the son-in-law in this way, and then after that, the son-in-law, the father-in-law. Maternal uncle means on the mother's side. They come again after a full year has elapsed. If they come, you know, less, then it's not so formal. Then you deal with that. You don't perform that. If it's been that long, then you receive them with madhuparka. Like that. Madhuparka is mix of, how do you say? Honey, yogurt, I think milk,
yeah.
Like that. Or you can mix the whole panchagavya, but generally it's mainly honey, yogurt, and milk. So sometimes, seeing different ideas how it's honored. You know, some say, well, it's just drink, or this or that. And I remember one devotee used to make strawberry milkshakes and give that. Because you're going to drink it anyway, might as well make something interesting, you know. So they hand a glass of that, you know, madhuparka. What do you do with this? So you drink it, you know. But so madhuparka means you have a small bowl and it has this in it, and that's shown before the person who you're receiving with madhuparka, like that. Then they'll take, that I remember, it's the thumb and the middle finger of the right hand. And they'll just touch the mixture, and they'll touch the mixture and throw a drop. You know, means they're facing east, right? Means we're showing just directions so you understand what's going on. Doesn't mean they have to be facing east, but let's just take the face, the direction that the person receiving Madhuparka is facing is east, right? Because in puja you always orient everything like that. So we'll take one drop, throw it towards the east, one towards the west, the north, the south, in the four directions. Then you'll take one drop and then throw it in the mouth without touching. Then after that, then you'll do achman, means wash the hand, sip some water. So that's why Prabhupada also calls it Madhuparka achman. Right? And some devotees were complaining it's not achman, but it goes together. So it's all Madhuparka achman. You can't do one without the other. And it's not taking a strawberry milkshake. That's what you do with it. So you're taking one drop after sprinkling it in the four directions.
You put it in the fridge and take an ice cream.
What's left you might do that with, but the offering when you're receiving the person, that's not what you're doing. Like that. So this is the. Okay, and then a king and a Shrotriya who comes on the performance of a sacrifice must be honored with the honey mixture, but not if no sacrifice is being performed. That is the settled rule. It means if there's a big sacrifice going on and the persons who come to take part in the sacrifice, they must be received like this. Or the king, you've invited the king for this. So even if it's less than a year, then that has to be done. But if there's no sacrifice, then no Madhuparka is offered. It says here, that is the settled rule. It means, in other words, there's no discussion. Just because he's the king, or just because he's the Shrotriya, the officiating priest here, doesn't mean that it'll be. If there's no sacrifice, then the rule still applies. If it's 1 year, then it's followed. Okay, so that ends the section on guests. Ooh, now we get into Shraddhas. So, are there any questions on all this? Or?
In the beginning, you told me about vegan. And I just remember from Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're running up dust for a strong and silver and for it. And he was vegan in different ways. But I think, he said, the Lord Chaitanya said that. You're in the mentality that, oh, will this person give me something?
That was Raghunath was saying.
Uh-huh. So how is begging actually beneficial for a Brahmana? Because it seems like it's a disturbed kind of activity that you're like.
No, that was because he's always going. We have to understand is that if we're going to take some of these higher examples, see, now we're dealing in the realm of the Madhyamas and more advanced, you know? And bringing up to those who are more advanced. So we have to know who the example is for. Right, we have to know who the example is for. Just for the means here, renunciate means if Grihastha is looking for a more regular kind of sustenance. So for him to perform, live by begging or live by collecting grains from the market left over after the market closes, or going to the fields after they've harvested the field and just picked up what's going on the ground. Then this is takes some detachment to do that, because how much you'll get, what you'll get, if you'll get, it's not guaranteed. You have to depend upon the Lord, right? So that is a great step. You know, that is a great step. Now, within those who that is their situation, then he's going begging there because he's always begging from the same people. Then he's thinking, well, this guy gave me yesterday, maybe I should ask him, and this and that. So then there's the aspect that comes again, the aspect of you know, the steadiness and this and that. Therefore, then he just, instead of doing this interaction, then he went and just picked up those grains that were thrown. No one wants them, and this and that. Even the cows wouldn't eat them. And then it's like, you know, it's just very simple, straightforward. No muss, no fuss, nothing. Because the other one, you have to sit there, stand there, wait for the guys and have them go over, and then they'll ask you, want this or that, and well, whatever you want, and it turns into a whole song and dance. You know, so it takes a lot of time and a lot of energy. But this, he just goes, picks this up, finished. You know? So, I mean, how simple it is, just you go, whatever the temple, you know, gives, you go, sit down, eat, go away, you know. So it's similar thing, just whatever's there. You know? So it's that principle is there, just what comes easily without any endeavor. You know, so that's the principle there for there. But the begging is, it creates humility, because somebody may refuse. You know, they may tell you to go away, like G here was telling yesterday, that the Chinese, they just ignore you, you know. And then when you try to get their attention, then they do look at you and kind of wave their hand like, you know, you should, you know, become scarce. So it creates humility. So that's the purpose of begging, is for humility. Because otherwise, see, the kshatriyas aren't allowed to beg because the one they're supposed to give protection. You know, the vaishyas aren't because they're supposed to give in charity to others. You know, shudras ideally shouldn't, because they should be working under somebody and be maintained by them. You know? But the Brahmin, because he's on the top of the pile, then he has all this knowledge, all this respect. There has to be some way to keep him humble. So begging is one of the ways. You know then one's humble, one's dependent upon the Lord. You know, like I think before mentioned, or it's either before mentioned or it's coming, about the amount of grain. I think we already went through that. Someone can keep, you know, X amount, like a year's grain or something like this. You know, that's fine. You can do that, and then somebody may keep less, you know, like that, some weeks and that, or 3 days. But it said the best is someone who keeps only enough for today. It was talking about grihasthas. Because that person then is very just dependent upon the Lord. Whatever the Lord sends, then that's good. Yes, amazingly, even with Y2K. But one has to factually be able to live that. See, this is the point, is that devotee who practices like that means he can live like that. And if Krishna sends, he has. And if Krishna doesn't send, he's not bothered. Because he knows Krishna is taking care. Krishna is in the heart. Krishna knows you're hungry. Krishna knows what you need. And when Krishna wants to give it, he'll give it. And if he wants, you know, what he gives, when he gives, that's what you accept. And if he doesn't, then there's some reason not to. Just like the mother. The mother is always going to feed the child. You don't. The child actually doesn't have to worry. Like, what would the mother think if, you know, she's feeding the child, she notices the child's taking extra, and she says, "What's that for? I'm putting this away for later." You know, and says, "Why?" And says, "Well, maybe you won't feed me later." What would she feel like? What would your mother feel like at that? Would she be, "Oh yeah, that's a great idea," or "They're very intelligent," or would she be totally devastated? Right? Because mother's going to take care. So the devotee is like that. He knows Krishna will take care. Whatever happens will happen. It's up to him. And he just leaves it to that. You know? Narad Muni, it mentions, there's a purport in Prabhupada saying that a sadhu, if there's nothing to eat, he just drinks water. Because you drink water for 2 hours, you don't get hungry. So after 2 hours, when you get hungry, you drink more water. Like this, you can go on. And so then it goes into the storyline, which is Narad Muni. I think this is the time when Narad Muni comes to visit Yudhishthira. And it said he hadn't eaten for 3 days. In other words, he had been following this system, just drinking water. You know? So, you know, it happens to the best of them. So he goes from 3 days of having nothing and no one, you know, like that, and then now he's going to be hosted by the emperor of the world. So like that, then the Brahmin can't be disturbed. You know, one moment they're very nicely taken care of, the next moment, you know, there's nothing. It's up to the Lord, whatever. He knows what's best. Many times you see you're endeavoring for something, it's not happening. If you just leave it, then some short time later you'll find out it was actually better. You know, like you were trying to get something to eat, this, that, couldn't get anything. Like that. Then you find out, you figure it out later, if you had eaten, you would have got sick. Or then you find out later that there's some, you know, some big feast or something like that. Or, you know, somebody just tells you, hey, you know, you got to go somewhere. And if you had eaten, it would have been a big trip. You know, just eating a big meal and then you got to go on a 10-hour bus ride. You know, there's no bathroom on buses. You know, so then you actually see, you know, Krishna's taking care. But it may not necessarily, just like the mother. Sometimes she's feeding the kid very nice things and sometimes she's feeding him medicine and stuff that doesn't taste good or doesn't let him eat this or that because he's sick or, you know, like that. So sometimes it's not always pleasant. He wants to go out and play, you know, and mother says no. Because there's a reason. It's bad for him. So Krishna takes care like that. So the child doesn't necessarily understand. But, you know, the adults do. Like that. So like that. So begging is quite a bona fide system. Because there, we're talking grihasthas, brahmacharis, grihasthas, you know, sannyas also goes begging, like that. It's interesting, for the brahmacharis in that, the mantras, bhavati bhiksham dehi, you know, bhavati means the mother, O mother, bhiksham dehi, bhiksham, alms, dehi, give. So then, the sannyas, just reading it yesterday, then is bho matar bhagavati bhiksham dehi. Much more. O fortunate mother. The other one is just O mother. But this one is O fortunate mother. You know? Means you've added in the bho, which is that of respect, and then called Bhagavati, means very fortunate mother. Then give alms. So there, it's part of the thing. You know? But one can also, like the python sadhu, whatever came. So one can beg, or just take whatever comes. At all. But as one advances, then one is dependent more and more on the Lord, and he can live like that. But it has to be, it naturally works. It can't be you do it for a couple of days and then freak out and then, you know, go out and buy everything in the market and, you know, stock it in every cranny and corner and drawer in your house, you know. No, you find what is the balance, you know. You can live with nothing in the shelf. Just what you have today, and then what will happen tomorrow, then we'll see. Or, you know, keep 3 days, you're satisfied, or keep a few weeks, or keep, you know, 1 year, or, you know, Y2K, keep a few years, you know. So, I mean, it's up to you. Whatever you are going to feel comfortable with, that you will be able to remember the Lord and perform your duties. Like that. In other words, the whole idea is detachment is there, but it must be gradual. As it gets more and more deep, has to come naturally. But one should be endeavoring for it. Means one should study, know, and try to understand, and then whenever, as the opportunity comes, apply. Not just saying, "Well, this is I'm attached." I used to remember hearing one brahmachari always say this. You know, and I said, "Well, why are you doing all this?" "Well, I'm attached. You know, I'm just." I'm fallen, I'm attached to this. Because you know. He'd always see him in the best places. He'd always eat, you know, whatever's the best food around, the maha, whatever, he was always there. You know, like that. You know, just wonder, you know, why do you endeavor so much like that? Well, you know, sage, you know, very fallen and like that. And so, you know, but that's not the standard. means you have to know what is correct and endeavor for that. But then situate yourself where you're comfortable. And then slowly, slowly move to the next step, move to the next step, move to the next step. Does that make any sense?
Then we end like Raghunath Das Goswami eating the rotten pieces of grain.
Yes, no, but he washed them first.
Yeah.
So that the rotten part outside went and you only had the hard, dry part inside. Yeah, and then you eat that. A little crunchy. Lord Chaitanya liked it. Or you can, Gorky Shordas Babaji Maharaj, collect some chickpeas and you soak them overnight in a scald. Eat them with some green chilies in the morning. And I'll have to follow that one. Yeah. Just have to get your own skull. But if it was not meal time, means he didn't eat until he finished his rounds. So if his stomach got very overly enthusiastic before he'd finished his rounds, then he would pick up a handful of dirt, throw that in his mouth. Tell the stomach to be satisfied with that. And then he was going to, one grihastha brought him to his house for alms. Like that. Krishna, sir. And we need some oil in this lamp. So then, feeding him and all that, and he was eating, like when you have in the cooking, you use bay leaves and there's chili there and certain kinds of, vegetables have sticks in them or, things like that. So he was eating everything, the bay leaves, the chilies, and everything like that that you would normally set aside on the plate and leave. So then the lady, seeing this, the next time after she finished cooking, was very careful to take all these things out. So then she fed him this. And then after that, the next time he came, he said, "I'll only eat rice." And then she was saying, "Well, why?" He says, "Because otherwise you're spoiling me." I mean, he was just eating everything, the bay leaves and everything, the chilies and peels and all that. And then she took it all out, so she's spoiling him. So he just figured this is too fancy, like that. So he just eat plain rice, like that. So these are examples of in other words, one accepts what comes easily without any endeavor. That's one of the rules of Chaturmas. Accept that which comes easily without any over endeavor. So we see is that when it's not Chaturmas, when it's prashad time, you go, you sit down, you eat, and you walk away. Then I've seen devotees during Chaturmas spend 2 hours to organize their rice and dal without any spices in it, and then, get it all together and put it on the floor and eat it off the floor. So they spend like 2.5 hours, for this one meal, when normally when they were, just one of the boys, they might spend half an hour, eating all the meals in the day, 45 minutes, in a day, eating 3 times. It would take 2.5 hours for one meal. Like that, it's got to be. But one of the rules is accept that which comes easily without any over-endeavor. Like that. So that's as much an important thing as the other. Means that's actually has the more spiritual benefit. The eating the the cooked rice with the dal with no spices, that purifies the body. So the idea is during the Chaturmas is that, you can't travel and you can't do much. It means at least in India, when you're moving in the villages, the roads just go to pure mud. So So no one travels around. So you just take advantage rather than go through all the hassle to go, you know, trudge through all that with no great benefit. They sit down for 4 months and they just study. They study and you know, association with other devotees. And that's what they do. So they recharge and gain more knowledge and all that. And then 8 months they preach. So during that time, since you're not doing much physical activity, if you eat rich food, you get sick. So they take advantage. So they eat simple food. It keeps them healthy. Plus, especially Havishan, it purifies the body. Because irregular eating and all that kind of thing, then, you know, it's bad for the health. You know? Different places, different water, different food, different spicing, sometimes eating in the morning, sometimes eating, sometimes not eating at all. It throws off the whole system. So for that 4 months, they just purify the system. And then they are able to, then their health stays nice while they preach the rest of the time. So that was the Vedic system. Very practical. You know, because it's a lot easier than just, this depends upon how long you want to preach for. You know, a few years, then, or a longer time. Anything else?
I was just wondering about this, respecting the person as a Brahmin, where one is not a Brahmin, who would upset the demigod and Supreme Lord. This would be applicable also to devotees, you know, like offering respect and service. The devotee who is not in the highest grade would also accept the Lord or can be accepted.
See, it says who doesn't know the what is the top truth. So basically all devotees know that. But one should, it mentions that even amongst brahmanas that you're worshipping according to their grade. They're senior to you, equal to you, junior to you. If they're senior, then they're worshipped like that. And if they're equal, then they're dealt with in that way. If they're junior, they're dealt in another way. So facility is offered according to that. So the devotee means automatically that they are such, that they know what is the purpose. But their realization may be less or more. Kanistha madhyamutam. Like that. So depending upon the adhikar, then they're always taken care of. Like we see, but what it means is someone who's posing as a Brahmin. You know? Like you do, you have professional beggars. That was one of the things. You know, Prabhupada, he was not overly impressed. Means all these beggars would come to his father every day would feed 4 sadhus. You know, here's recommending you feed 1 or give alms to 1. But his father would feed 4 every day. So Prabhupada is looking at these guys and he's saying, some of these guys, these are not sadhus. You know, these are just beggars that are dressed up as sadhus. The Prabhupada's father was is they've come in this way, so we'll deal like that. You know, that's why when Bhakti his friend said, let's go see Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says, you know, I've seen plenty of sadhus every day, 4 a day, you know, I see. You know, and I'm not impressed with these guys. So, you know, another sadhu, you know. But then when he saw Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then he was impressed. Like that. And he was impressed. Like that. In other words, one should be careful not to be, you know, fooled by bogus sadhus. You know, in India there's tons of them. You know, the West a few less, but you do have them. You know, like that. There's all these ones that are so-called, you know, sadhus and gurus and religious leaders. It says those kind of people you invite to your house, and worship them as you would someone who's supposed to be a Brahmin with realization, means who understands the absolute truth. That's considered improper, like that. But to bona fide devotees, to respect them and deal with them, that's not a problem. I mean, what goes on nowadays is not very great compared to what was there. I mean, at least I remember as a new devotee. When Prabhupada was here, then we dealt with the sannyasis greater than we do the gurus today. The temple president greater than sannyasis today. Brahmanas greater than temple presidents. And the regular devotees, you know, better than senior devotees. The other new bhaktas. It means every day you saw, the first thing after you finish your bath in the morning, immediately it's the first person you see, please accept my humble obeisances. And then, you know, I mean, you can offer a lot of obeisances before Mangalarti.
Even if you'd be one week older.
Yeah, or even if they weren't, even if they were anybody, you just offer your everybody you offer your obeisances to. You know? But I remember when sannyasi came to the temple, the whole temple stops, goes, greets them, you wash their feet, you bring them mahaprasadam, they give all the classes, lead all the kirtans, and, you know, and do all the different things, whatever's going on, and give all the advice, and this and that, and then they move on. You know, nowadays, you know, your gurus and that come to a temple, you know, especially if it's a bigger temple. You know, who's this guy, you know, so you can go by, and, you know, unless he has some people that like him, you know, no one goes, no one cares, you know. And that's for the gurus. The sannyasi is less than that temple president, you know, who's ever, you know, cares or even heard of him, you know, isn't he the guy that sits in the office, man? Like that, and regular devotee, you don't see... Unless it's a real close friend you haven't seen for some time, then please accept my humble obeisance. But like on a daily, just everybody offering obeisances to each other, you don't see. So devotees are jumping up and down now about, you know, so much respect. Where's the respect? What respect? The standard has fallen so heavily from Prabhupada's time. And then they're saying, this is too high. You know? This is too high. I mean, we used to offer more, I would say, have a better feeling and more respect to just the new bhakta who had also joined, you know, a couple of days before or after you, than we do for, you know, general senior devotees. And there was a natural willingness or desire to offer respects. Like that. So the standard's fallen so much, so it's like, you know, within nanometers, you know. Then, wow, hey, there's 3 nanometers of respect here. You know, I think we should cut it down to, you know, half a nanometer.
Once in a year.
Yes, once in a year. Half nanometer. You know. But when Prabhupada was here, then nicely everybody was dealt with. Everybody was respected. So that's, it's a difficulty. Means we want to create humility and all these things, but then it's supposed to be across the board. Like that. It's supposed to be across the board. So one can deal in that way. You know, expect, you know, very simple living and all that from leaders, especially the sannyasis. But then along with that goes all the other aspects. If a sannyasi keeps nothing, that's no problem in the Vedic age, because when he travels and he goes somewhere, then like here, he's received and given whatever he needs. But if he can keep nothing and he's not going to be received or taken care of or given any facility, then what does that mean? So that's just miserliness. That's just lack of culture. Like that. So there must be balanced. There must be balance. It has to be. If we want the sannyasis walking barefoot, then we have to have the grihastas giving 50% of whatever they get their hands on in charity. Like that. The two go together. The knife cuts both ways. And if we don't understand that, then we can talk social development until the cows come home and nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. But we must understand the rules have both sides. how one gives the respect, but then also how one takes the respect. Like that. Both sides, both have to be followed. But if there's an aberration in one, doesn't mean that therefore you throw out the other. Means the means, how you say? If the pendulum's on one side and then you swing it to the other, it's just going to swing back. You bring the pendulum to the middle, then it's balanced. It doesn't swing either way. It stays nicely fixed. So that must be, we must see these things. Otherwise, nothing will improve. Can't improve. We were discussing yesterday. It means here it was pointing out that if women are disrespected, it can destroy a whole dynasty. And it didn't say they're devotees or anything. Right? Yeah. So now if you put on top of that the element of devotee, then how much more important is that? Right? So we have to be very, very careful. It says if a Brahmin comes to your place, is not respected. When he walks away, he takes all the spiritual merit with him. So that means there must be understanding of what we're dealing with. We're dealing with devotees. We don't understand. It's Prabhupada's potency is so great that he has made devotees so common that we take them as common and ordinary. Means you see in India, you see so many people who are well studied in the shastras and gentle and cultured. They're so amazed by what Prabhupada did. For us, it's just very ordinary. But they look at, and they know. They know the scriptures, they've seen the histories, and they see what Prabhupada did. They say, no one has done this. Right? Ramanuja dealt with a few lower class people. There's one group of persons that he initiated. Like that. Now, others were just, dealing with, high class people. Like that. They see Prabhupada went out and took those who were, totally averse to the Vedic culture. Means the cultured Indian saw British in India for 250 years. And you never hear the British taking up Vedic culture. They worked very hard to destroy it. That's the fun of this class. This very book here was translated by a man whose simple purpose of translating this Manusamhita was to destroy Vedic culture. So we're taking his book and very happily using it to show the superiority in how to practice the Vedic culture. Right? But we didn't see them coming. Like that. So now, cultured Indians, who have been around and like that and seen, heard, then they're saying here, these same people now, we see them with shaved heads and dhotis and tilak and chanting Hare Krishna and giving up all their opulence and everything, right? They gave up their opulence to come to India. And the British came to India to steal all of India's opulence, material wealth. While these others have left their wealth and come here to get spiritual. So they see, this hasn't been heard of. And they know 1100 years of the Mughals. Another batch of, Yavanas. So they saw the Mlechas, they saw the Yavanas, and they weren't all becoming, They just came here and this and that, tried to convert everybody to their culture. Here we see these are giving up and coming to this. So they're amazed. Why? Because they're educated. So they know what how special it is. So we also have to educate ourselves, what does a devotee mean? We can call it what a topmost devotee is, and unless you're on that platform, then you're a schmutz. You know? So no respect should be given. Right? Unless you're top, you know, uttamadikari. Right? Then no respect. Like that. So that's not necessarily well informed. That's not the symptom of being well informed. Because all devotees should be respected. If it hasn't been, then correct it. Right? But otherwise, if you just use the same methods that you complain against, what's the benefit? Mm-hmm. There's no benefit. This will end here. Go on talking all night. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.